Our fourth and final case this morning is State versus Ramos. Is counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed. Thank you.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court, my co-counsel, counsel for the appellee. My name is Timothy Norlinger. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Ramos. This matter is an interlocutory appeal regarding the discharge motion that was filed on Mr. Ramos's behalf pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 2912073. I wish I had been able to write my brief after the court's rulings in both Moody and Bixby, because the law appears very settled at this point as opposed to when I wrote it. Initially, there was a speedy trial claim both constitutionally and statutorily. I would concede that State v. Moody, found at 311 Nebraska 143, makes it clear that the constitutional claim cannot be raised in an interlocutory appeal and the matter must proceed to trial before doing so. Bixby is important in this case because this case involves a very specific set of facts. As this court is likely aware, Bixby can be found at 311 Nebraska 110. The procedural history of this case is that Mr. Ramos initially proceeded to trial on the underlying charges on August 6th through the 9th of 2018. At that point, a mistrial was declared. It was moved forward by the defendant because the state's witnesses had violated a sequestration order. A plea and bar was ultimately filed as part of that case. That filing occurred on November 2nd of 2018. The mandate on that case was returned on March 31st of 2021. According to Bixby, the trial, the time in the 6 month clock was 184 days, that being 6 months past August the 13th, 2018, which was February 13th of 2019. Pursuant to my reading of Bixby, which appears very clear, the entire period from November 2nd, 2018 to March 31st, 2021, 180 days, is also excludable, therefore extending the speedy trial clock under Nebraska Revised Statute 2912.07. Really, the only issue here involves another motion that was filed prior to the plea and bar, specifically a stipulation for change of venue. The record shows that the venue motion was a joint stipulation of the parties filed with the court on August 30th of 2018. That order was issued changing venue on the 5th of September 2018. The court indicated that there was an oral motion in its order filed on the 23rd of August 2018. That factual finding, the appellant believes, is clearly erroneous. The record does not indicate that there was any hearing held on August 23rd, 2018. There is no hearing in the Bill of Exceptions for that date, nor is there any journal entry to indicate there was a hearing on that date. Furthermore, in the appeals transcript and the exhibits offered to substantiate the appellee's position that it should be that 13-day period from August 23rd, 2018, and not August 30th of 2018, they cite to Exhibit 705. Exhibit 705 is the stipulation I previously referenced that was filed on August 30th, 2018, and not the 23rd, 2018.
Mr. Norlinger, first of all, let's talk about that stipulation. This is not a stipulation that both parties signed. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
So this is a stipulation that the state is just stipulating to several things. Is that correct? Well, would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. Okay. I will note, and the court's probably aware, I was not counsel for Mr. Ramos at the time of these proceedings. I have my co-counsel to rely on how this all worked out.
Okay. In that stipulation that the state signed, the stipulation recites, and that's, of course, stipulation is part of our record, that stipulation recites that counsel for the defendant filed a motion for change of venue that was deferred, and then that in this conference call, counsel for the defendant, just quoting it, counsel for the defendant indicated they would renew the motion for change of venue. There had been a prior change of venue before trial.
Before trial.
And then the court's ruling on that basically is, let's see if we can get a jury.
Which they
kind of looking at Mr. Nelson because he was there. And a jury was impaneled.
Correct.
And so that took care of that motion.
Correct.
Okay. So then in this case, then the at least counsel for the state was saying that the motion for change of venue was renewed in that conference call.
Yeah.
And so what's the effect of that?
Well, I would say that that stipulation, based on what I've been able to glean from that conference call, is not an accurate statement of what occurred. The understanding I have from the conference call is that there was discussion about change of venue. The defense indicated they needed to confer with Mr. Ramos about that, because obviously the appellant has a right to be consulted with regarding whether or not that should be done, and that pursuant to that, the stipulation that the court's referencing here, Exhibit 705 in the one I've noted that was filed on the 30th, was then filed and ruled on.
Okay, but the court, in its order, basically agreed with the state that that the motion for change of venue had been renewed on that date. Is that
the
correct?
Factual finding that Judge Johnson made in her order denying discharge did note an August 23rd, 2018 date. I will concede that.
All right. Okay. So I guess that leads me to a question. And if you're saying that the stipulation is just the state, so that it's not, I mean, it's not signed by Mr. Nelson or
Mr.
any
Garrett,
other representative of the
right.
of the defendant. Can the state move for a change of venue?
I think the state could move for a change of venue.
Why does the statute allow for that?
Well, I can't recall the language of the statute. I think the court would probably know better if you're asking the question than me off the top of my head.
You feel like a trap is being set?
No, I don't. I just can't tell the court specifically what the venue statute says. I will tell you it wasn't part of what I looked at preparing for oral argument. So I will defer to the esteemed court and whether or not that's proper. However, I will point out again that there is no filing made in this case, nor is there a record of any request for a change of venue on August 23rd, 2018. And I believe that's important. What I would tell the court is the appellee's position would be similar to me in a criminal context, saying, I'm going to call up counsel for the state 30 days before and say, hey, I'm going to do an alibi, or 10 days before and say, hey, I'm going to file a motion to suppress, which is statutorily required. However, the statute requires notice, and a filing has to be made. The state's argument is essentially that some conversation that's had off the record that doesn't exist in this appellate record stays an additional 8 days, which appears, based on the record before this court, to be a specious argument and clearly erroneous. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. Morning, Ms. Faust.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Stacey Faust. I'm Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska in this matter. Based on counsel's concessions, I think we can all agree there's no jurisdiction on the constitutional claims, so the only claim before this court is Ramos's statutory speedy trial claim. I submit there are really two sub-issues regarding that claim in this case. One was, when did the 6-month speedy trial clock restart under subsection 3 of 29-1207? Was it on the date of the mistrial, or was it on the mandate on remand? And if it is the date of the mistrial, then that's when the excludable days for the change of venue matter.
And Bixby clarifies that for us, doesn't it?
That is my position, yes, Your Honor. And I also filed opposing counsel filed a petition to bypass in this case. I objected, stating that I think Bixby controls. Nebraska Supreme Court overruled the petition bypass, and we're here, and I think that's very telling.
But even using that date, then, is there a potential problem here with regard to the motion, the mysterious motion for change of venue?
I don't believe so. In its order denying discharge, the district court found that Ramos renewed his motion for a change of venue on August 23rd, 2018, a stipulation by the state. It was only a state stipulation. It wasn't a joint stipulation on change of venue. It was filed on August 30th. And frankly, if defense counsel didn't agree with the wording of it, he should have objected to it. He didn't. And the court granted the motion for change of venue on September 5th. This court reviews factual findings for clear error. Those findings result in 13 excludable days from the day after August 23rd when Ramos renewed his motion to September 5th when the court ruled on it. There's not a motion in the record, and there's also not a hearing on the record, but there is that stipulation, and that stipulation recounts what happened during the August 23rd conference call between the court and the parties. This was not just simply a telephone call between parties off the record. The court was present, and the court found that there was a renewal of the motion for change of venue during that call. And so the district court findings are the 13 amount to 13 excludable days. I don't think that this court can find that that finding is clearly erroneous. And adding the additional 13 excludable days to the speedy trial clock, Ramos prematurely filed his motion for discharge.
If we were to find that it was clearly erroneous, there'd be a problem, right?
Actually, there would not be, because there is additional time that can be found based on good cause. What I would ask in that circumstance is that this court would remand for findings, because we don't have any good cause findings, and there needs to be in that instance. There is evidence in the record that supports additional excludable time.
Okay.
All right. If there are no further questions?
Yeah, well, I'll ask you the same question
okay.
I asked your co-counsel. Can the state ask for a change of venue?
I don't know the answer either.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
I think he does.
I'm in the appellate section. I wish I would ask the prosecutors that. I wish we would have thought of that before I left.
Anything else?
No.
All right.
Thank you. We actually affirm the judgment of the district court, but dismiss Ramos's constitutional claims for lack of jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much time is left?
We have 2 minutes and 8 seconds.
2:08.
Right. Thank you. In addressing counsel for the appellee's claims, first, the appellant believes that the date of August 23rd, again, it just doesn't exist in the record. The only thing in the record from August 23rd for this court to review is a return of a criminal subpoena that was done for the trial that was declared a mistrial. Therefore, the finding is clearly erroneous. Now, with regard to what counsel for the appellee brought up with regard to good cause, the appellant would say that there was not a showing of good cause made in this case. The appellee at the hearing for discharge called the bailiff for the court to testify about the court's calendar. I believe what was clear is that the court had just gotten done with two murder trials, but had also had time after that, starting in April of 2021, where the trial could have commenced. In this trial was set to start in August of 2021, when discharge would have been proper in July of 2021 and had expired based on the count of the appellant on the 18th of July, which was a Sunday. So the 19th of July, 2021, which was 3 days before the motion for discharge in this case was filed on July 21st, 2021. So really, when this court looks at the case, the appellant believes comes down to the issue of this change of venue, and the only filing that occurred was on the 30th of August and not the 23rd, and therefore we would ask the court to grant Mr. Ramos's motion for discharge, and I'll submit it on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for being here. We will take the case under advisement. You are excused.